Today on Inside Utah Politics, Attorney General Derrick Brown joins the program. We discuss Utah's latest lawsuits against public lands, big tech, and the state's relationship with China. Plus, we're 6 months into President Trump's second term. Our panel weighs in on the successes and failures as midterms approach. And one state could decide control of the House for the rest of President Trump's term. Hear why the special session in Texas could have national implications.
You're listening to Inside Utah Politics with Lindsay Ertz.
Well, thanks for joining us today. I am Lindsay Ertz. Let's go inside Utah politics. Well, there may be a new administration in Washington, but Utah still has a handful of high-profile lawsuits working their way through the court system that could have major national implications. To break it all down, I'm joined today by Attorney General Derrick Brown. Attorney General, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me. Good to be with you.
Okay, let's dive right in. The latest headline of this week was that a case against you got dismissed, and that was a case brought by the Southern Utah Wilderness Alliance, which essentially tried to say that Utah does not have the right to sue the federal government because we gave up those rights at statehood. But that case was dismissed.
It was dismissed because it was a silly lawsuit. And frankly, it was trying to stop me from filing a lawsuit on behalf of the state. But as the attorney general, that's something that I have the right to do. And so what we're doing now is looking at our options, everything is on the table because public lands is incredibly important. It's incredibly important to me, to our state. I mean, I love mountain biking on them. I mean, these are our future. And so we need to figure out the best way to protect them. And so there have been a lot of questions about what we're doing. And the answer is right now, everything's on the table. We're looking at all the options.
Yeah, and that's the answer to the, are you going to file a federal suit question?
Yes, and you're the first one to ask me about this specifically. And the answer is we are, I mean, currently in conversations trying to figure out what we're going to do and looking at all the options.
Because Sue's argument really here is that Utah gave up its right because in our state constitution or our state ordinance, it says we forever give up these rights to this land. It shall be managed by Congress, more or less. Why do you believe Utah does have this right?
That's not the whole story. And the reality is there are other rights, and we made that case with the Supreme Court, and they decided not to hear that specific case. But we're looking at the options of making those arguments in another forum and basically explaining why it is that holding on to these what we call unappropriated lands forever may not exactly be what they should be doing under federal law.
And you don't believe that was the intent of the people who created that document, if you will?
I think we have some good arguments for why that may not be the case.
Okay. Well, we'll have to see how it goes. So no decision yet today if we're filing this suit in federal court.
We are still looking at our options, and that's kind of where we are. Because as Attorney General, my job, I mean, we never file lawsuits on a whim. We always do all of our background, our research. I mean, I really want to make sure that all the, you know, I's are dotted, T's are crossed before we do anything.
Let's switch to a lawsuit you have filed, and that is against Snapchat. Now, this is the latest in Utah's push to hold social media companies accountable for what you allege is harming youth and harming minors. This Snapchat lawsuit, you allege that their design features are intentionally addictive. Just explain to me why you believe that.
Well, Snapchat is different from the other social media channels because in some ways it lulls us into this false security because they have what's called ephemeral images where they disappear. So kids really do think that because the image disappears, it's, you know, they're not at risk. But the reality is in some ways it makes it more dangerous because they think that. But we have a lot of evidence of drug dealers and people trying to extort younger kids. And so it sort of lulls them into this false sense of security. But one of the reasons we're going after Snapchat per se is because that's where the kids are. I mean, we've seen recent studies that show that between, you know, kids between the ages of 9 and 14, they are on Snapchat on an average of 40% of them are on every day. And they have this feature called a Snap Streak, which incentivizes kids literally to be on there every day to keep it up. And we know there's anxiety when kids aren't on it. In fact, I was just talking to a mom whose daughter was going to a summer camp for a week and asked her mom to log on to Snapchat for her every day so that her Snap Streak wouldn't be broken. And so, I mean, those are the kinds of addictive features that we're seeing. But people who don't have our kids' best interest at heart can take advantage of that.
Why is this not, though, a First Amendment right for these folks to express their free speech in this way?
Well, there is obviously a right to express free speech, but when it comes to our kids, when it comes to kids that are 9, 10, and 11 years old, and you have an app that is not verifying the ages, for instance, or you have an app where you have drug dealers who are specifically pushing things like, you know, we know for a fact that illegal THC cartridges are being pushed specifically to kids and to a lot of high schools in the Salt Lake area, when they have policies in terms of data collection that are a little bit disingenuous. I mean, we know for a fact that these things are happening. So it goes way beyond, and that's the right question to ask, but the reality is it goes way beyond First Amendment free speech issues. I mean, these are our kids.
Why is Snapchat alleges you're trying to get around age verification laws? Is that something you're trying to do with this lawsuit?
Well, we want them to engage in age verification. I mean, that's the reality is someone who's 9 can say that they're 18. Someone who's 30 can say that they're 13. And that's one of the problems. I mean, here in Utah, for instance, we have had 4 different prosecutions of an adult who has been, who is engaged in inappropriate behavior and been arrested. And the platform through which they actually identified and got to know and then connected with the kids was Snapchat. And so we're aware of this. From a prosecutorial standpoint, we're on high alert. And the reality is you talk to any parent whose kids are on Snapchat, and I think they're all aware that this is a problem.
What do you want the courts to do with Snapchat? Shut them down? Or what are you asking
for? Well, I think there are, first of all, they've been engaging in practices that are deceptive. I mean, they're collecting information on our kids. I mean, let's start with that one. I mean, how do parents feel about an app that deliberately collects information? And so what we've done is filed this lawsuit under the Deceptive Practices Act in Utah, which says, look, you need to be open, you need to be transparent, and you need to engage in behavior that is honest and has integrity as it relates to the people on that platform. And then there's an additional measure of burden when we're talking about our kids. And we do have the right, and one of the things I do as Attorney General specifically is protecting kids. I've talked about this from day one. We need to protect kids. And I mean, there are lawsuits we have against Meta and TikTok, and those are problematic from an app standpoint or a platform standpoint. But Snapchat, that's where the kids are.
Interesting. All right, let's switch to a final topic here on China. And the state in the last couple of weeks has come out and said that they blocked a Chinese company with ties to the Chinese military from owning land near the Provo Airport. How are you involved in that issue, and why is this such a concern for you?
Well, ultimately, the land issue is critical because we're seeing around the country areas where Chinese ownership of land is taking place around areas of national security, military bases, that sort of thing. One of the things I've done as Attorney General is gotten to know and work with other AGs from around the country. And we are seeing a lot of Midwestern and Western-based states with these kind of land ownership issues. And we need to be very cautious of anything that involves national security interests and the country of China, because in many respects, there is an ongoing war of sorts with China, and I think a lot of people aren't aware of that. I mean, a lot of the drugs coming into our country are pushed by China, and so the reality is we need to be on high alert, and I think it's important as a state that we take these issues on, and we've seen the legislature take it on, and my office is involved in that as well.
Yeah, tell me, how can you sue any of these landowners? Like, what do you do here?
Well, there's a law in place that specifically talks about ownership mm-hmm. by foreign entities, and so one of the things is we work on that issue. And I mean, it's not as easy as it sounds, because you can't always know who the owning entity is when it comes to a particular parcel or an entity, because we don't, here in Utah, the laws are not such that you always know who it is that owns them. But so one of the things we're doing is engaging in investigative work to figure out who that is, working with the legislature. And other states are doing this. I mean, we're seeing this around the country because there are issues of concern as it relates to China.
We have 20 seconds left. Feel free to tease any other lawsuits you're working on.
Well, right now we've got we have a lot of lawsuits that involve lands, mm-hmm. and that's for me front and center, things involving national monuments or roads. But ultimately, what we want to do is protect our lands and preserve our lands. And we feel like, and I feel like as a state, we're in a better position to do it than the federal government. And so our legal strategy will reflect that approach.
I always wonder that. Are we? Do we have the money to do this? Do we have the infrastructure to manage these
lands? If you look at the fires going on right now, I mean, the federal government is doing a lousy job of managing the lands on which there are fires. And if you compare that to the state-managed lands, you'll see an entirely different result, a positive result. And so I think that provides a juxtaposition between the two.
Attorney General Derrick Brown, thanks for your time today.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
It's good to be with you. Well, still ahead here on Inside Utah Politics, cuts to PBS and NPR hit the president's desk. We weigh the impacts with our Inside Utah Politics panel coming up next. Back. We are 6 months into the Trump administration, the president marking the occasion with several Truth Social posts and White House press releases touting 6 months of what he calls winning. Joining me to weigh in on whether they believe that, Adam Gardner and Leah Murray. Leah's with Weber State and Adam Gardner, a lobbyist. Thank you both for being here again.
Thanks for having us.
All right, let's dive right in, shall we? First of all, the White House touting that Congress has passed the Big Beautiful Bill as a win for the president. Leah, let me start with you. Win or loss for
Absolutely
President Trump?
Absolutely a win. Yeah. Right? I don't think anybody thought it would be possible. They had a self-imposed deadline. It was unclear whether you would get one big, beautiful bill, right? There was a conversation about splitting them up from the jump. He got exactly what he wanted. And a little bit, I don't know, Adam, if you agree, the Freedom Caucus, which kind of squawked a bit about what was happening, folded. So not only did he get, like, it's a huge win because he silenced critics who have been obstructionists, I think, in the United States Congress over the last little while.
That's a really good take. Yeah, I totally agree with that. I think
that's it. We're ending the show right there. The take's done.
That was
and
a
we're
good
done.
Take. Yeah. And I'll, in answer to is it a win, I'll just say yes and no. Yes, it was a huge win because the Trump tax cuts from 2017 were made permanent. That was a big deal, something they had campaigned on and promised. His no tax on tips. I thought no tax on tips was the dumbest thing I've ever heard. No tax on overtime, the second dumbest thing I've ever heard. There's no way they're going to get this passed. No tax on tips passed unanimously.
Right.
In the Senate. I've never seen a policy like that pass so quickly, Republicans and Democrats agreeing. So you had a lot of wins there, a lot of losses where he campaigned on reducing the deficit and that Biden spent a ton, which he did. Trump spent more. Biden spent a lot. And now he increased the deficit with this one bill, $4.5 trillion over 10 years. Who are we kidding? You did tax cuts. That's awesome. But you're certainly not fiscal conservatives while passing this bill.
And $4.5 trillion in increasing the debt while we tried to cut it about $9 billion. That's sort of a drop in the bucket when we're talking.
A very large bucket.
We cut some foreign aid and then we cut about $1 billion in public broadcasting funding. So talk to me about that, whether that spending cuts package was a win or a loss. I would say folks at PBS see it as a loss, but perhaps, our very own senator, in fact, John Curtis was on this program last week talking about how it was a win for the administration. How do you guys see it?
Yeah, again, it's a win for Donald Trump. We've talked about this. I feel like Senator Romney got in trouble for wanting to cancel Big Bird. Wasn't that a thing in his presidential election in 2012? So whatever it is about the way Donald Trump is messaging what has been Republican, they want this for years. That's a win. He delivered on something that Republicans have wanted for a long time.
And you also get to campaign on something that's very minuscule. So you increase the debt by $4.5 trillion, and then you cut $9.4 billion, and then you get to campaign on that as a huge win. And we actually passed something that will cut the budget. So that
can
be a win.
But we actually increased the debt. That's what's confusing to me.
Yeah.
Right.
Right.
But again, it's
it doesn't
a win.
Matter. It does. Yeah. That's the thing. It doesn't matter. Right. It doesn't matter what
that
we did. It doesn't matter
me,
that the deficit expanded. It doesn't matter that our debt is getting out of control. All that matters is we cut $9.4 billion in programs that we haven't liked for a long time, and we can campaign on that as a win through the midterms.
One of those programs was PBS, NPR, cuts to public broadcasting. Senator John Curtis, as I mentioned, was on this show last week talking about those cuts. Let's listen to what he said.
The vast majority of the money that is already coming from private contributions, the U.S. contribution is actually quite small. And what we're really saying is, look, it's time. You've been subsidized all these years. It's time to fly on your own. And I think they will, and I think those services will continue to be offered.
Okay, so he's saying those he doesn't think there's going to be a huge impact here. Leah, how do you see this? Is there going to be an impact specifically to PBS Utah, who produces some of these programs?
Yeah, I mean, I think 10% cut out of a budget is an impact, right? So a little bit. Adjustments will have to be made. I think thinking about how, I mean, very specifically for me, I'm on the Utah Debate Commission, Lindsay, and we use PBS Utah's studios to run those debates. And now you're like, well, maybe that's part of the 10% that goes away because we're only doing those every 2 years, and maybe they just cut that out of the budget. It's going to have an impact.
And Adam, what Senator Curtis and I talked about last week was a lot how they were looking at things that they wanted to claw back, things they didn't think they should fund anymore. If you're looking at the entirety of our $4 trillion budget, are PBS and foreign aid the biggest low-hanging fruit there? Are those the priorities to cut?
They are definitely not the low-hanging fruit. He made a commitment even to close down the entire Department of Education, which is a ton of money. And they didn't move on a rescissions package at all to get rid of that. The funding level stayed pretty much the exact same. So all the really big things that Republicans have wanted cut for years stayed the same. We took a few programs that that his base really wanted to see get rid of. And look, I'm not his base, but I agree with a lot of these cuts. And so I'm okay with some of these. But he got to have wins off very minuscule amounts of spending cuts. And we were able to leave all the big things that we've really wanted for a long time, just leave them alone.
Yeah, we'll see if there's any more cuts that come. Another win the White House is touting is the price of eggs, saying that the wholesale price of eggs is down 53% or $3.09. Since the inauguration, it's down 62% or $5 since its March peak. Is President Trump responsible for the price of eggs coming down?
Oh, nobody gets to claim credit for it because he's the president and they get to claim credit for the economy.
So, I mean, we had a bird flu epidemic. We had to kill all the chickens, most of the chickens. That caused the price of eggs right to spike. The chickens are living now after a couple of years, and so we have more production. The price of eggs is going to come down. That's great. He can tout that they got cut in half. I love being able to spend less money on eggs. My wife decided that she was going to get cheaper eggs and built a chicken coop. Now we get to pay $700 a dozen. And so I'm glad to see the price of eggs come down, but the president gets to claim credit for it because he's the president of the United States, and stuff that happens on his watch, he gets to claim credit for. Bad things that happen, he doesn't have to.
Right, and it kind of plays into the overall question of the economy. Is Trump winning on the economy in his first 6 months?
I think yes, don't you think? Well, again, that's a hard question, I think, to answer. I feel my own 401k has rebounded, and he is responsible. Not directly, but as the president, he's the steward of the economy, so he gets credit for that.
Look, you at the beginning, you had these tariff fights that were crashing the stock market, crashing the bond market. And then he said, hey, we're going to do a 90-day pause. All of our 401ks right did really, really well after that. And now that these 90-day pauses are coming off the line, hopefully in the next few months, we're not going to just see this this teeter-totter of up and down and up and down as he continues to make agreements with other countries.
So what's the president losing on right now? Both of you have agreed pretty much this whole time that these are issues that he is winning on. What's he losing on?
I think absolutely lost the narrative, and maybe we shouldn't talk about this, about Jeffrey Epstein.
That was going to be my thing.
The answer, what you have is this old story that, quite frankly, he and his base kind of drummed back up last year and threw it like a hand grenade out into the campaign, something that he talked about. They're going to release all these files no matter what. And then the minute they see the files, all of a sudden there's nothing to see here. He's annoyed at people. People are stupid who are asking about it. And he's not regaining that narrative. I see that as a loss.
A lot of his base is starting to turn and say, we never really cared about the Epstein files, but a lot that were really loyal to him, they're not buying it and they're really upset. That's going to be a loss. It's like this chink in the armor from his base that is going to get wider and wider. I would say another issue where he's lost on is Ukraine. He's gone back and forth and been too friendly with Russia. The majority of Americans stand with Ukraine, not with Russia. And he has seen that as he gets closer and closer to Vladimir Putin, that the American people, even a lot of Republicans and a lot of conservatives, are against those moves. And so he's had to increase shipments and weapons to Ukraine. I think that's a good thing. If he can lean into that, he'll gain those people back.
What about immigration? Is the president winning or losing when it comes to his messaging and or the implementation of some of his immigration policies?
His messaging, I think, is horrible. I think he's always been pretty bad at messaging, but one of his strengths is just to not care what anyone else thinks. And so he's kind of living in a reality show right now. And the more it is on TV and the more people are seeing apprehensions and the more you can talk about alligator Alcatraz, these ridiculous things that he's coming up with, the more he talks about him, all his supporters see and the American people see is, wow, he's actually really doing something on this, and the last guy didn't do anything on
this. But some would argue that's not a win. Some would argue that's stoking fear, that's creating communities who are scared right now. We've had instances in Utah that have happened. We saw a really rowdy public meeting recently in Utah County when we talked about an agreement with ICE. How is he winning on that messaging when some would say there's all this fear out there?
I think in the short term he's winning because numbers at the border are down, right? So when we think about just,
down.
We are down hundreds of thousands of people trying to cross the border. So if I can point to that, if it is the case that we are talking about ICE, and they're, I think it's 3,000 arrest quota they've got a day, they're going to start sweeping up people that we don't want them to sweep up. Then the messaging is going to get away from him. But right now, I think it's a win, Lindsay. You know, I think kind of long term, how those stories start to pan out, then it starts, I think, flipping to a loss.
Yeah, we'll have to see how it all plays out. Leah Murray, Adam Gardner, thank you so much for all your insights today on the first 6 months of Trump in office. It has been definitely a wild ride, so we appreciate all of your insights today. Well, coming up on Inside Utah Politics, Texas in the national spotlight, how a special session there could reshape the race to control Congress in 2026. Stay with us.
You're listening to Inside Utah Politics with Lindsay Ahrens.
Well, control of the House of Representatives for the rest of President Trump's term could hinge on Texas. Lawmakers there 1 week into a special session where they're considering redrawing Texas congressional maps to make 5 more Republican seats at the president's request. News Nation's Xavier Walton is in Dallas with the story.
It's all about tipping the scale. Here's the thing. The entire country, including President Trump, is eyeing the Texas legislature's special session where state lawmakers are considering redrawing congressional districts, a move pitched by the president to help Republicans get an even bigger advantage ahead of the 2026 midterms.
And there could be some other states. We're going to get another 3 or 4 or 5 in addition. Texas would be the biggest one, and that'll be fine.
Are you calling then for a complete redrawing of the congressional map?
No, just a very simple redrawing. We pick up 5 seats.
He says simple. Governor Greg Abbott of Texas, of course, an ally of President Trump, calling on state lawmakers to flesh this out within the next 30 days or so. Abbott citing constitutional concerns raised by the Department of Justice as to why Texas needs to redraw current congressional maps. On the other side of the aisle, some Democrats equating this strategy for Republicans to hold on to power in the midterms to a 5-alarm fire, adding it will harm the state's marginalized communities. Democrats say Republicans are out of touch and should be focusing on passing laws aimed at preventing another catastrophic flooding disaster like we just saw in Texas Hill Country.
They're so scared to lose in 2026 that they'll stoop so low as to cheat the system. You know who asked Governor Greg Abbott to do this? Trump. Trump asked Texas to squeeze out 5 new red seats in Congress. Instead of putting all their efforts into helping flood victims rebuild, Republicans are focused on disenfranchising voters.
Democrats in blue states now saying that 2 can play that game with California, and Governor Gavin Newsom saying they are also considering new maps. Meantime, on the flip side, GOP lawmakers in red states like Ohio, Florida, and Utah also considering following Texas's lead to pick up more seats. From Dallas, Xavier Walton, News Nation.
And of course, Utah's map's currently tied up in the courts in litigation here. So as soon as we hear a ruling on that case, we will bring it to you. Well, that does it today for Inside Utah Politics. Stay in touch with us on social media, will you please? You can find me on X and Threads, Lindsay on Air, on Instagram as well, Lindsay spelled with an A. Also, Inside Utah Politics is on Instagram, so search for us there. And wherever you podcast, you can get this and our other streaming show in podcast form as well. Now, if you're looking for more national political coverage, too, check out the new show from our Nexstar National Network, Political Power Ranker. Our national political director and the head of Emerson College Polling look at who's up and who's down in the world of politics based on the data. And we carry that for you on our free streaming app as well. It's called News for Utah Plus. You can download that if you have Roku, Amazon Fire TV, and Apple TV. Well, thanks for joining us, everyone, and we will see you next week.